Like, you're playing your nervous system. You know?
Hopefully we got that.
The chair. Dude, that was the universe, bro. That was divine intervention.
All right, beautiful. Well, thank you for joining me in Sauna Sessions. We made it. We met in freaking Ibiza. We've connected in Egypt.
Yeah.
And now we're in a sauna in California.
I love how life works that way.
It's magical, right?
Yeah, it really is. I'm learning more. I'm accepting magic as being a reality. And the idea that coincidence is actually, perhaps there really is no coincidence, or maybe sometimes there are coincidences, but if you're keen enough in observing and you're sensitive enough to be able to listen, coincidences, what you thought was coincidence, starts to be more rare.
Well, you talk about this, right? I mean, you talk about what a Buddhist principle, right? The beginner's mind, or to see the world as a child. You talk a lot about play. Mm-hmm. So I guess it makes sense that, you know, to see the world is magical, is something like a child would do, right? Like this is kind of like Disney World. If you look with the eyes of wonder.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And if you're looking from the eyes of that wonderment, it opens you up to creativity. It opens you up to more, I think, empathy, you know, more flexibility. Allows a person to be a better father, you know, a better business owner. Opens you up to more novel ideas. You're probably familiar with a lot of the research that's done around that. But even just a person writing in cursive is suggested to be supportive for boosting a person's creativity. You know, so actually incorporating that fluid movement with the wrist starts to engage the brain in such a way to open you up to more novel idea making.
Calligraphy too, right?
All of it. Yeah, just expressing through your hands.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, your hands are structured to create and to perceive. It's like your fingertips are some of the most sensory rich structures in your whole entire body. Have you ever heard of the thing called the homunculus?
In Latin, it means the
little man.
Okay.
So essentially it's like a structure. It's like a diagram that represents how much sensory receptors are allotted to different parts of the body. And it's like a little, it looks like literally a little man. And it's a map of the anatomy of the brain as far as how much sensory receptors are allotted to each place. And within that, like you have like, the little man has big lips. They have these like huge hands. They've got like, you know, decent sized genitals. It's representative of how much sensation you have available in different parts in the body. And the hands are like one of the richest points in the whole entire body. So to leave that, you know, kind of like squander that sensitivity.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it would be a waste.
Wow.
To do so.
Wow. You know, you're a guy of many understandings. I think you like you say, you do body work, you read a lot. You're actually, when we met in Ibiza, you were always taking notes. Like when we were at the table, I noticed, you know, Jason was saying, so you take a note and look. The only other person I saw do this is Richard Branson. And it's like, you know, you're never too old to learn. You're never too young to teach kind of philosophy. And I love that about you.
Yeah.
You focus a lot about alignment, right? You've got the Align book. You've got the Align bands, you know. Tell me, what are you trying to do with this Align method, and how are we in this world today? How are we misaligned?
I mean, one, I'm not aligned. You know, it's like I'm like aligning. It's like definitely an active verb. And there's moments where I'm in much greater levels of alignment.
Okay.
And moments where I'm like, oh man, I'm pretty darn disorganized right now. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, it could be as simple as something you've just been traveling in your wreck and your sleep is off, or maybe you have some kind of relationship stuff that's putting you through some kind of like psycho emotional maelstrom. Yeah. You know, like, dang, I am disorganized, son. Like I am in the chaos right now. I am in the entropy, you know, and then there's different things that we can do. Like there's physical practices that we can do to bring ourselves into more balance, you know, and physical structural alignment is a big part of that. But I think the really big one is, you know, mental emotional alignment. And that's the thing that's becoming more present for me, you know, so things like meditation, you know, and things like breath work, or, you know, I did a session yesterday with, do you know, Dr. Christian Gonzalez?
Mm-mm.
He's an interesting guy. He's really amazing. But we did a session with him yesterday. It was kind of like a somatic experiencing session conflated with like tapping and breath work, and he's got you like toning and like yelling and shit. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. And going through visualizations of, you know how they have like a, you know, imagine there's a door. Like, what does the door look like?
Yeah.
You know, and set yourself, okay, now open the door. What's behind the door? Mm-hmm. You know, and connecting me to my parents and my dad and all this and that. And it's just so amazing the how much is stored inside your person. You know, how much emotional history and potential pain or traumas or glee or, you know, love. Mm. And one of the things that came through for me with the opening of that door in the session yesterday was behind the door. I was like, I was afraid of opening the door. I was looking at it. It was almost like a dungeon kind of thing. I was like, well, there's like lanterns on each side. Mm. And upon working through the point of like, okay, now open the door. On the other side of it was this beautiful forest. And it was like this beautiful light coming through. And it was like the most beautiful thing I could ever possibly take in. Mm. And it made me cry. I was like, it really had like a really deep, sincere moment where I was like full on like breakdown crying because I had this deep visceral sensation of I have been resistant to allow myself to actually open up to all of the joy and all of the gratitude and all of the love and all of, you know, all of the things that work well on Instagram hashtags, you know, but actually to really fully feel that sensation of feeling fulfilled, feeling loved, like allowing all the love in, allowing all the love equally to come out and not living in a subtle clenching state.
Protecting. Like, you're trying to protect yourself.
Yeah. I'll love you 95%.
Yeah.
Like you got 95%. But that last 5%, I'm going to kind of keep my foot on shore because I don't know. You know, but to actually come into a place of I fully, completely trust the world.
Yeah.
I trust this relationship.
Yeah.
I trust myself.
Yeah.
I respect myself. I respect this relationship. I respect the world. I honor them. I honor myself.
Yeah.
I honor this relationship. I honor the world. Like that's, that's like, whoa, like how many people are really there?
Yeah. Well, it's fearlessness. And I don't know too many people, unless they've achieved a complete enlightenment, that they live in a world of complete trust and surrender and fearlessness. It's very rare.
How do you get to fearlessness? What do you think the... What's the composition? What's the recipe for fearlessness?
Oh, man. You got to trust. You got to trust that all is well and unfolding as it should. That's the biggest mantra.
Trust.
Yeah. You got to trust in that energy that brought you into this world and allowed you to be here, and that it's going to take you exactly where you need to go.
How do you develop trust if you're, say, you're 80% trusting?
Well, if you really want to go deep.
We were just on it.
Because there's like you develop a balanced, a healthy spiritual ego. Mm. That's one way. And you can exist in the world and be happy and, you know, get along and live a happy life. And then there's another way where you recognize that you are not this ego. That's not even you. You are one with all things. All right. This is what every spiritual tradition worth its weight is talking about, right? We are one. And it's not something you can intellectually grasp. I think in our world today, we think that everything that we can understand can only be understood with this thing, with the brain. We worship the brain. But maybe there's something beyond that, beyond thought. Mm-hmm. And this is what Eckhart Tolle talked about. This is what, you know, your boy Ram Dass, I'm a huge fan of him. What he talked about is really identifying as not the ego, but as spirit. But really, it's something beyond words, right? He who talks doesn't know. He who knows doesn't talk. So you don't really talk about this stuff. It's just what you are. And so I think you get to that place when you're simply aware that you are not these thoughts and you are not this body. But I think it's also grace. I think that there's some people who have meditated for 60, 70 years and they're still holding on to something. And maybe it's not for them in this lifetime, as some people might say. There's some people like the great Ramana Maharshi, who was 13 when he achieved complete enlightenment. When he faced death, he asked himself, who is it that dies? What is it that dies? And he recognized that actually there's nothing here. There's nothing that actually dies worthwhile. Who you are is not this body. Who you know, who you are is not these thoughts that come and go. It's something more. And I tell this to people but only a select few, I think, are chosen to really understand it. This is my experience.
Yeah, or they're maybe at that point, if you believe in incarnation, like in their incarnation.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that's something I think that I can have stress on myself or other people or anything. It's like, you need to get this right now. Not necessarily this, but just anything. It's like, maybe you don't need to break your drug addiction in this lifetime. Yeah. Maybe you don't need to break your fear, your anxiety, or maybe like this is probably relevant for people with their parents. Mm. It's like, cool, maybe your parents are alive for another 20 years. Mm. And there's just patterns that you're like, God, they got to stop this thing. Oh, it's so draining when we're talking. Oh. Mm. It's like, maybe they don't.
Yeah.
Like maybe it's your work to come into greater levels of compassion.
Yeah.
You know, and actually 100%. Really truly be a mirror, a reflection of love, unconditional love, no matter what superficial pattern they're expressing. Mm. And maybe perhaps that could be the medicine or the solution to starting to open them up into that frozen child part within themselves that's never actually really fully felt unconditionally loved. Maybe their child is the thing that actually opens up that space for unconditional love.
You know, Einstein, he said that being a model isn't the main way to influence someone, it's the only way. Mm-hmm. You got to walk the talk, you got to be it, right? You got to hold that compassion within you. And that's why I say it really, I mean, doing the work, reading the thousands of books, listening to the gurus, it comes down to that single statement, all is well and unfolding as it should. Mm-hmm. If we can recognize that, we don't have to control things in a way that we feel it should be, right? I think it was Ram Dass, he said that the world is perfect as it is, and so is my desire to want to heal it. Mm. This balancing act.
Yeah.
I think these states of consciousness, they're not limited by logic. You throw logic away, you throw paradox away, and you're free. You're free to say that the world is perfect and there's things that I want to heal.
and the wanting, the desiring to heal in the peripheral, i.e. the world, is, I think, as a general absolute, a reflection of a desire to heal something that is unhealed within self. Mm-hmm. And I presume, because I still have a lot of work to do, so I'm not in any position to be like, well, this is how it is when you're fully healed. But I presume that when you come into a place where you actually really do feel whole, which is the etymology or the root of health, it just means whole. It's like an old English word. It's like help. To be healthy is just to be whole. Mm-hmm. And so healthy isn't that you eat the right vegan diet or carnivore diet or whatever. You know, healthy is that you feel... feel grounded in you're like, you feel at home in your body, like, wow, like I feel, that's it. I can have a full, complete exhalation. I don't feel any tension in my diaphragm or my hands aren't slightly crunched up. My traps aren't engaged. My pupils aren't, you know, in this myopic focus where I'm like ready for some threat to come in the door. I'm like, oh, like I actually feel home here.
Yeah. Home, that's a good word.
And a part of that would be the type of, you know, raw ingredients that you put into your home. Like, what is the wood in your house made of? We're using like some freaking hydrogenated oil styrofoam 2x4s.
Wow.
You know, or using like oak. We use like the best materials in this temple, son.
Yeah. I like that. And that actually brings me to... something I wanted to ask you about, which was architecting your environment, curating an environment that is in alignment with health. Mm-hmm. And one thing that is probably an epidemic in our world today is sitting, right? They say the chair is the new cigarette. Mm-hmm. Sitting down for 1 hour, I think, takes 22 minutes off your life. Mm-hmm. Smoking a cigarette, I think, takes 11 minutes off
your life. Which is obviously like impossible to quantify.
I think they came up with some formula.
Yeah.
But it's bad, I guess, you know, it's really bad to sit for long periods of time.
Only if it's too much. Like there's no issue at all with almost any human position. Like almost any position is pretty much fine. Mm. You know, barring you're not like putting yourself in a arm bar or something. You're like, you know, causing catastrophic damage. Mm. You know, but maybe there's some lesson in that somewhere. but sitting down, there's a few things. Like one, as a takeaway for folks, when you're sitting.
Yeah.
It's understanding how to engage with the tool that we call a chair. It's a tool.
Yeah.
You know? And so you can use a tool to do a lot of different things.
Yeah.
One thing is when you're sitting, make sure that your hips ideally are up above the height of your knees and you have a relationship with what are called your sit bones, your ischial tuberosities, or like the bony protrusions in the bottom of your pelvis. You want to be kind of sitting on just like the front edge of those sit bones. So like right in the middle, slightly tipped forward. That's because the lumbar L5-S1 vertebra, they're in the shape of a wedge with the wide edge of the wedge pointing towards the belly button. And so for your spine to be naturally stacked, you'd want that pelvis to be in that, you know, quote unquote neutral position. That neutral position wouldn't be folded under like a sad puppy dog kind of position. So if you're sitting in that position all day long, you're not really practicing ideal mechanics for when you get up. You're shortening the iliopsoas complex. Iliopsoas is two muscles, right? And so it's not just like the psoas major, it's the iliacus and the psoas combined. Plus they're in relationship with the diaphragm and the hip flexors and all of that. But you're chronically shortening those tissues. And then when you go to stand up from that position, those muscles, iliopsoas, they're connecting to the lumbar spine. They're chronically hypertonic or shortened. And when you go to stand up, it's going to pull you in to that hyperlordosis, or kind of like sway back position. And now you're setting yourself up for some type of like back pain or injury or instability or anything. And so when you do that over and over and over and over again, just start observing your body as though you are an architect of the most brilliant, beautiful temple on the face of the planet. You are the architect. It is so beautiful. And every moment there's an opportunity to like get your freaking, what would an architect or like a sculptor do? Like a, what's one of these guys called?
Paintbrush.
Not a paintbrush. Not a scalpel. What's the thing called? Like putting stone, putting mortar and stuff on stone. What's this thing called?
Yeah, yeah, I know what you're talking. I don't know the name.
Your little shovel thing.
Yeah.
You know, get that little shovel thing out and make something beautiful, man.
Yeah.
And a part of making something beautiful is having the know-how of like, you know, how do I make a balanced system? Like get educated on how to drive the body. And there's really simple things. Like one of those would be, if you're sitting down, make sure your hips are up above the height of your knees.
See, here's what I think. I think it's, you kind of got to burn the bolts to some extent. You got to put unhealthy food in a way that makes it hard to get it. You don't have to throw it out. And so you got to put good habits in front of you so that you actually do them, right? You, seeing is believing. And I think, you know, out of sight, out of mind. And here's something I'd love for you to give me advice on, but I was actually considering getting rid of all my chairs.
Yeah, be fine.
And getting, just sitting on the ground.
Get floor cushions.
Yeah,
floor cushions. Really comfy-ass floor cushions. Yeah. Moroccan poofs and get like, you know, coffee tables and just make everything low.
Zen table, yeah.
So most of the healthy cultures are already doing. It's not a big deal. Like go to Japan and you just sit on the ground. It's very normal. The cultures that do spend time regularly on the ground, they have minimal to no incidence of osteoarthritis in the hips and the knees. They have very like minimal pelvic floor dysfunction, fall risk, which is, you know, it's ultimately becomes like a $1 billion industry. And it's not just money, you know, it's sovereignty and autonomy. You know, like you want that for your grandparents. You want that for your parents. You want that for yourself.
Yeah.
You want to be sovereign in your body for the rest of your life. Very important. And if you are divorcing yourself from this fundamental range of motion, which is just getting up and down off of the ground, it seems stupid to talk about until you can't do it. Then you would pay anything to get it back. And you ain't getting it back, you know, if you've gone too far. You could still get it back probably, but you've gone too far. It's going to be hard. You know, so the solution to that is like, how about we just don't lose it?
Yeah.
How about we just start today actually embracing and valuing the things that we have. So now we're getting into like, you know, spiritual stuff.
Yeah.
It's like maybe the path to getting more is valuing what you have.
What you have, that's it.
Okay, what do you have right now? Can you get up and down off the ground? Okay.
Yeah.
Do that.
Recognize.
You know, maybe now, maybe do a little like toe sit. Maybe get up on your toes. Maybe do a 90-90 position. Maybe incorporate like some FRC movements and do some like isometric stuff and go through a deeper range of motion. You know, maybe you can take a walking meeting.
Yeah.
Like value your legs. That's one of the strongest indicators and predictors of longevity is just robust leg strength. You got strong legs, you're a boss.
Yeah.
You're a boss.
Yeah.
When you feel boof on your legs, like you're dangerous. It feels good to be dangerous.
Yeah, good base. Some tree trunks.
Yeah. Like get out of this stuff like this, like toxic, masculine, whatever. Just like be dangerous.
Yeah, be
dangerous so you can protect yourself, protect your family. Like you want to be the person, this gets into like natural movement stuff. You know, you want to be the where all of that was originally founded was being fit for service, being like strong to be able to support other people.
Yeah.
So it's like, you said you had a UFC guy in here recently. That's like, if some stuff went down, he can protect the whole room. If he needs to scale this building for some reason to help someone in danger, he can do it. He's dangerous, but he's able to, he's using his potential to be able to support. If you're not dangerous and you're just like, you know, sweet, meek, soft, kind of like doughboy thing, it's fine. But don't you want to be able to support? You know, so to me, that is very exciting. The idea of like, no, son, like I will protect my family. I'll protect my girlfriend, protect my wife, like protect my friends. Like I am a protector. That's like, oh, let's lift some fucking weights, bro. Like, let's go. It's not, it doesn't need to be like a toxic thing. It's like, no, like get as strong as you can.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, that word dangerous gets me. There must be a different word, because danger is like you're a danger to people, or maybe there's something more apt.
If you don't have the potential for violence, like it doesn't exist, then I think that it's harder to respect that person. And this gets into contentious territory.
Yeah.
But there's something about someone, and I know that you know people like this, where it's like, and typically the more higher degree black belt that you have, or the more that you that confidence you have, the more sweet and peaceful you're able to surrender into.
Exactly.
And you're like, bro, I just want a hug and I just want everyone to get along. I'm so sweet.
Yeah.
It's cause he's so dangerous. Is the person that doesn't trust in their own confidence to be able to protect, to be able to serve, and be able to like, bro, I know I'm so confident in my body.
Yeah.
I don't have anything to prove. Suddenly there's, with that person, there's this air of like stillness that comes from that, you know, and also compassion and like, I want everyone else to win because I'm so confident in my system.
But there's also, I think, another aspect, right? I don't know if it's just the physical fortitude, but it's the mental as well, right? Because there's a lot of guys who are big, strong guys, but emotionally weak.
Compensation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very easily triggered. So it's like, and this is what I think all martial arts should really focus on, is that inner discipline. And I think we're saying the same thing. I was looking at, I think it was the military, Joko, I think. He's like, if you get into a bar fight or something, the first thing that you need to do is run. And I think Bruce Lee said the same thing, like, just get out of there.
Yeah, and be able to run.
And yeah.
Serious. That's a part of it.
Yeah.
Like, be able to run. Like an ostrich.
Yeah.
Listen, I can run.
Yeah.
I could put somebody on my back and run out of here.
Yeah,
that's a part of strength.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not just like, oh, cool. Like cool default. I run. It's like, well, can you run?
Yeah.
Because you got to be fit to run, son.
Can you run?
It still goes back to the same conversation.
Yeah. This body, I think we have is a gift. It is a miracle. You talk a lot about in your book something called power poses that I really like. How your posture can affect your attitude and your mood.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's called postural feedback. So that's, you know, a lot of research, like anything, is very contentious. The stuff that you're referring to, there's a lot of different versions of this, and we can talk about it. But it's the stuff done with Amy Cuddy in Harvard. She is like one of the most popular TED Talks ever. And they measured cortisol levels and testosterone levels after just being in the quote unquote power pose, which is just basically like a stacked neutral strong
stable body.
Okay. Yeah, like hands, you know, hands on your side, pulling your shoulders back, opening up your diaphragm, opening up your thoracic inlet, which is the space where your head pops out of your shoulders here. You know, so that contains all of these vital organs and pathways, you know, your arteries and your veins and your lymphatic glands and nerve ganglia. It's just all, it's like a dense complex of stuff. You know, that's why these places are called chakras.
Okay.
Like chakras in the body are just places of density. You know, so if it was a highway, it would be places where all the roads are passing at the same time. It's just like, well, there's a lot of stuff there and around the heart and around the dantian and around the pelvic floor and around the throat, you know, and around the head, you know, in between the eyes, brain, crown. Those spaces are anatomical structures in the body. It allows your body to be able to circulate fluids well.
Allows
your nervous system to function. If you had some crimps in your hoses, which is what you are, you know, you're like this glorious, elegant complex of water-filled sacks and hoses. Yeah. That's what you are.
Yeah.
You're an ambulating river or a lake that's bound together by muscular septa and your epidermis and all of the different things. It's just a bunch of water bags. And there's water bags circulating and moving, and then there's membranes allowing water to perforate. And it's just this amazing, elegant orchestra of water circulating through your system, water and crystals and things of the sort.
Wow.
It's freaking beautiful. And so when you just think of like a hose, if you crimp a hose, you have less effective circulation of hose water. It's a similar thing if you're putting yourself into a, you know, a crunched over kind of like nerd neck or whatever, like forward head posture, or you are in like hyperkyphosis, you're hunched over your spine, you're in just any of those positions that you're putting a lot of stress on the joints. You're also putting stress on those hoses. And so when you're in those positions from a, like a musculoskeletal perspective, you're just aligning your joints on all the connective tissue and all the tubes that pass through that, which will naturally make you feel more, you know, strong. And then there's also the feedback mechanism of every time in the history of your life, if you felt sad, how did you feel sad? Like physically, how do you express sadness? What do you do?
Well, you hunch over, you fetal.
If you're really, or how do you express fear? Shoulders up,
tense,
right? You might go more into like that myopic vision, you know, really focused in vision. You're really focused, i.e. focused in on a cell phone all day. You know, or focused in on some point that you're driving and you're really giving your eyes a break. So all of that has been associated into your mental emotional state. Those positions are associated into feeling that certain way.
Wow.
And there's a guy called Paul Ekman that you'd really appreciate. He's like the 100th most cited psychologist in the world.
Wow.
I did a podcast with him a few years ago, and he traveled to, he's really old, he's like an old guy, but he traveled to Papua New Guinea and various different cultures to observe this facial feedback mechanism.
Tell me about that hypothesis. I love that one.
So he found 10,000 specific facial gestures, all with specific meanings. He like defined these meanings, and the suggestion was, this is very interesting, the suggestion was, previously, Darwin even believed this, was, or he like hypothesized this, that facial gestures and mannerisms like that is, they're actually learned postures.
Yeah.
So you learn how to like, like smile. You're like, oh, cool. Everybody else is smiling when I'm happy I do this. You know, you learn resting bitch face. It's like, like this consternation. Like, but in fact, those are actually baked in. Those are innate human primordial systems. So when you, so you can, so like allow yourself to wander into this, like, oh, crap. Okay. So this is tied in my postural expressions, my facial gestures, the organization of my spine. That's all tied in for millennia to indicate, send a signal outward into the rest of the world, how I'm feeling. Okay. Hold on. Does that mean that perhaps I could manually come through and start to open up those spaces that I may have had bound tension in my body for the last 20 years. Since I, maybe since I started elementary school. I'm in the chair, I'm hunched over. Now I'm staring in the iPad all day long, you know, depending upon what year it is. You know, now I'm like, you know, shuffling from class to class. Now I feel insecure with myself. Then suddenly puberty comes in. Now I'm insecure with my sexuality. Now I'm as a woman, I'm growing breasts and like, this is weird. It's just a lot of like, ooh, reasons to hide. And now you're bound up and you're learning about math and, you know, history and you, no one's teaching you how to be in your body. No one's teaching you about your emotions. No one's teaching you about like any of the things that are actually going to prevent you from having an anxiety attack in 5 years. It's not on the table. So the hypothesis would be perhaps since those movement patterns, those postural expressions create this feedback both internally and externally to myself and to others of my mental emotional state, maybe I could go through and actually manually start to change my structure, my posture. Perhaps that would start to inform the story of who I believe I am.
Well said. Beautiful. You know, ever since I learned this a few years ago, the first thing I do in the morning is smile. Just put a big smile on my face. And they say the facial muscles have the biggest impact on mood than any other place. It changes your day. Because I feel like my brain, many people's brains, is a fault-finding machine. So we wake up, we, okay, what do I have to do? Damn, I didn't do that yesterday. I got to do that. I got to do the whole list. But when you smile, And I literally have a sign above my bed that says smile 1 minute.
Oh, cool.
So I do a 1 minute smile and it changes everything. It's cool. One small thing that can change. I think that can change somebody's life. It can just give you that momentum to start the day. Yeah.
And if anything else, it's supportive in taking yourself less seriously. It's like the idea of like when like a laughing yoga class or a yoga class. Like sometimes the spiritual stuff can get a little too much spirit. Mm. Like Alan Watts has a bit about that. It's like if you have an alcohol or liqueur, if it's too much alcohol, it's like, it's too much spirit. It's too much.
Yeah.
You don't just want all alcohol.
Yeah.
Like let's get some oaks in there. Yeah. Let's get some like flavor.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't drink alcohol, so I'm not really that good at describing, but like you want to have a balance between that, like just humanness. Yeah. Of like, oh yeah, like, and I also take a poop, you know, and I also feel insecure sometimes and I feel afraid sometimes and maybe I feel ashamed.
Yeah.
And like, can I lean into that, you know, or am I just going to smile over it? Mm. So that's where it gets a little bit like tricky is, are we potentially bypassing this deeply held emotional memory by just putting on a smile? Because that can also start to build up. And eventually that deeply held stuff, this gets into like Bessel van der Kalk's work, you know, The Body Keeps a Score, Peter Levine, Awakening the Tiger, you know, somatic experiencing. It's your body will seek out the opportunities to heal itself and recapitulate or represent those wounding patterns that a person has internally. Typically it often comes out in relationship.
Yeah.
When you get into
that's the big one.
When you get into an intimate relationship.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's when a lot of this, like the primary caregiver stuff, your relation to mommy and daddy.
Yeah.
And relation to the world and relation to your genitals.
Yeah.
And your relation to just like your safety.
It's primal stuff. It's primal stuff that's deeply held. And I think it's like it's not what you do, it's why you do it. And I feel like you can't. Some of these things, even, you know, I know people who work out who look beautiful, even Arnold, right? Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I guess when I say Arnold, you probably know what I'm talking about. Everybody knows Arnold.
Yeah. Pumping Iron was like my treaties to existence as it growing up.
Where,
I was like,
this is classic.
This is my path.
It's classic.
Yeah.
He hated how he looked in the mirror. He's like, I can't believe this sack of shit could win anything.
Mm.
So this whole body, you could look beautiful. You could be in great shape, but if you don't get down to the root, which is the I am, who am I deeply, then nothing else really sticks. It just doesn't work.
Well, that's what you were. Yeah. Like it wasn't a complete paragraph or sentiment when I was saying be physically dangerous.
Mm.
It's not period done.
Mm.
It's also be internally open, you know, and be courageous enough to lean into those hard edges within yourself, because you are not going to push up your way through those. You need to cry, son. You know, you need someone to see you cry. Yeah. You need to like realize that there is some deep shit in there. Yeah. And if you don't think you have any sadness or any kind of shame or anything, you might be the one in a trillion.
Yeah.
But probably there's some stuff in there, you know, and just being open. That doesn't mean you need to create stuff.
Yeah.
But be open. Like, maybe there are still some like soft, vulnerable bits that a lot of my fitness stuff and my being dangerous stuff is actually compensating 100%. And covering. And it's like a salve.
100%.
And that, because your body is naturally seeking homeostasis, it's naturally looking to heal. You don't need to will a cut to heal. Your body's got it.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Like your body wants to heal.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wants to heal.
Oh, yeah.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
And it just needs the opening, the hallway, the information, the space to do so.
That's it.
You don't need to heal your cut.
Yeah.
You don't need to heal your cut. Yeah. You don't need to I'm going to heal my, but sometimes you might need stitches, you know, and like, okay, I need help. Exactly. Oh, this is deep. Beautiful. Bro, I need support.
Well said.
Oh, dang. Get me a butterfly bandage.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Now don't do anything. Keep it clean. Give it space. Get good air circulation. You know, incorporate the elements.
Yeah.
It's like, what's the temperature?
Yeah.
Well, it's like, okay, but I'm not healing my cut.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not healing before I'm in a dispute with someone. I'm not like, okay, I'm gonna fix this. It's probably a spaciousness and a listening and a compassion that will actually create the space to move forward.
To move forward. Love that. Love that. All right, let's move forward out of this sauna.
I'm just getting started, son.
Hey, listen, man. I sweat more than anybody I know. You know, I did protocol. It was suggested by Huberman to raise. So some, I can't remember the protocol.
Yeah.
Basically, it was like 60 minutes of sauna, like cumulatively.
Yeah.
And man, I tell you, I had the biggest headache. Like I was still, cause I don't know, I sweat out minerals and electrolytes really quickly.
Yeah.
So I literally had, even flying, like I have to take like 4 packs of electrolytes and not get a headache from a plane. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You sweat efficiently.
Yeah. Well, you know, my friend said people who sweat very well, they can let things go easily.
I see that.
I don't know. That's what he said.
I see that. I think most things, I'm not like confined to everything means something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I'm also open to everything means something.
So Aaron, what are you currently aligning in your life?
Oh, probably relationship to intimacy. That's the scariest thing for me as a guy. But I think that's a big one. Like really, we talked about it in the sauna a little bit. But being able to love without any inhibition or any kind of like, you know, ready to pull the ripcord, you know, like insurance policy.
Yeah, yeah.
And just being like complete trust.
No prenup?
No prenup. Yeah. 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 I think just, yeah, trust in the safety of love, which sounds pretty sappy. But I think that's been a big place of work for me. You know, and I think I've done a lot of compensation in the form of physicality, you know, and wanting to train martial arts and train, you know, my body to get into bodybuilding and get into strength training and all of these different things to create kind of like a facade of competence, you know, and a facade of strength. And beneath that, I know has been a lot of compensation, you know, and a lot of like, you know, fear of not being lovable, not being worthy. Like shame, you know, like unidentified shame in there, you know. So I think just the being open to anything that comes up within my subconscious, within myself, within my heart, and particularly in intimate relationships, you know, and being just like not.
Say that one more time. Being open to.
To, oh, I don't even know.
Anything that comes up.
Anything that comes up, you know, whether it's good, bad, ugly, uncomfortable, you know, whatever the thing is, just being able to be with it and not judge it, you know, and that's the really big thing. And when you can find people in your life, it could just be yourself. It could be your dog, but you know, it's going to be a bit more nuclear when it's with actual someone that you have intimacy with, you know, and like love, and you've opened yourself up to that level because then the ante gets much higher. To be able to find that type of relationship, just starting with yourself, of just having full acceptance of everything that is, everything that comes up. And starting off with that, when you can start off at that point of like, oh, okay, the thing that you're doing right now, oh, you're eating too much, you know, or you're like emotionally eating, or you have some kind of other weird compulsion, you know, or you're lying, you know, whatever the thing may be. It's like that actually is an adaptive pattern that you learned to survive, probably as a young boy or young girl, or maybe as an adult. And instead of it being like, I hate this pattern about you, I don't accept this pattern about you, what if we flip it and we come in and say, man, I love you so much, or I love myself so much, and you're here now, which means you survived. And at some point in your life, you learned this pattern to keep you alive. And you felt that you were in this place of fear, of scarcity, of threat, and you manifested this. Now it seems like an aberrant pattern, but in fact it actually is an adaptive pattern that kept you alive, and I fucking love you so much, and I'm so grateful that you're here, and because of that I love this pattern. That opens up this space for that pattern to start to come to the surface and say, oh, like I'm not like I can be here. And suddenly like, yeah, like come in, like let's talk, like I love, like unconditionally I'm here for you. Suddenly that allows something to happen with those patterns where instead of them getting stashed down and just getting tucked away into like into the shame cave, they can start to burble up. And now we're the pattern's in the room with us. You know, we can go like gestalt therapy and put the pattern in a pillow. Like, oh, cool. Like, hey, like, what do you want to say? You know, like you're fully loved here. You're fully accepted here. That allows that pattern to mature and grow up. And eventually, and now it's like, okay, what's next?
That's it. Yeah, I love that. They say, I think in Zen, you can have a cup of tea with whatever's, you know, your issues. You just you sit it down and have a cup of tea with it. What do you have to teach?
Bring all your neuroses in for tea.
Yeah.
You know, all the different little compulsive behaviors, or the shame or the guilt or the sexual compulsion or the whatever the thing is. And just like, oh, yeah, come. Oh, I see you coming up. Come on in. And then you can have like right relation. Whereas before, you just had this kind of shame-filled shadow relation. I don't want anybody, I don't even want to know about myself. I don't even look at it. That's fine, but it ain't going anywhere. And it's just going to grow. And it's going to start to slowly build up, and it's going to start to, because your body's continually seeking homeostasis, it always wants to heal. So all of those little compulsion goblins, you know, and neurotic patterns and shames and fears and whatnot, they're just under the surface.
Yeah.
And they'll start to come up, and they'll attract people into your life to start to bring them into the surface. And they'll attract events into your life to bring them to the surface. They'll attract actions into your life. Say, oh man, I'm busted. And you're like, ah, okay, here, you're not busted. You're in an opportunity to heal. Like, that's where you're at. You have this goblin is now at the surface. Like, it's like the wound is open. So we have the availability to say, like, okay, like, let's work with this. How can we go more? I want to understand this. That's what I would presume to be a very good parent, where suddenly the child's like, oh, like, you mean when I get angry, I'm not wrong? Like, no, you're not wrong. Like, angry is fine. Like, that's why would you have anger if you're not allowed to get angry? Like, you have the neurons and, you know, the receptors and the neurology to get angry. Like, it's great. It's actually an adaptive pattern to protect you. Anger is get away.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad that my son or daughter has get away, because that's going to keep them safe.
You know, it's interesting. The self-improvement fields, and it's almost never done. You're never there. And, you know, I've fallen into the trap, you know, of, okay, I got to fix this. I got to fix that. I got to fix this. But what you said is really the panacea, is like, whatever arises, just love that. And it gets to a point where somebody said, you know, when you clean your house, you don't investigate every single piece of dust that you remove out of the house. And I think love is that cure-all that just brushes everything.
Love's a secret weapon, bro.
Yeah.
It's no joke.
Yeah.
Love is gnarly. It's real.
It's a true strength. You say somebody to be dangerous, be also be loving. Be
dangerous, like hold love.
Yeah.
That's dangerous, son. That is powerful.
Awesome. Well, you, when I was in Boulder, I got this thing done one time. And you know it very well. It's called Rolfing.
Oh, yeah. I'm a Rolfer.
What is it called?
A Rolfer. I'm a Rolfer.
A Rolfer. Okay. Yeah,
I confess.
You're a Rolfer.
Did you know that? I didn't know that.
No.
That is hilarious. There's this odd esoteric manual practice that I bet you've heard of.
Yeah.
I went to school for 2 years for it.
What? Okay. Yeah. So, tell me, what is it? And do you feel like it's useful for people?
Yeah, I mean, Ida Roth, a lot of the influence comes from osteopathic medicine. A lot of osteopathic medicine, at least like European osteopathic medicine, is like healing with the hands, like bone setting, you know, moving the body into position for it to be able to heal, which I think is incredibly legit. You know, that goes back into like Greek times, you know, it goes back into like Jesus stuff, into the Bible, you know, like healing with your hands. That's been the way that we've healed for a very long time. You know, the power of touch is incredibly powerful.
It's needed.
It's
a human need.
Yeah. It deserves respect. Like, the amount of healing power that we have between each other, just with our hands, just with our intentions, just with our breath, just with our nutrition, just with our environmental conditions, just with our ideas. It's like, boom, bro. Rolfing is kind of infuses a lot of those more like esoteric, kind of like alternative perspectives into medicine, into manual therapy. And the main focus is working with fascia or connective tissue. And so it's kind of like slow, sometimes deep, doesn't need to be deep. It could just be superficial fascia, like the more superficial, you know, it's like, you know, it could be like the weight of a nickel. So it could be anywhere from very light to quite deep. The focus is on connective tissue or fascia, and the broader focus is on structural integration or alignment throughout the whole system. So it's not just you get like a full body massage. It's really thinking about reorganizing the foot in relation to the knee, in relation to the pelvis, in relation to the spine.
And it's multiple sessions over.
Yeah. I mean, I'm technically, well, I'm not really a Rolfer anymore because I'm not like a part of like the club or anything, but I technically went to school for it. And, you know, whatever, I'm, you know, I'm very familiar with it. And at one point could identify as a Rolfer. They have like a trademarked name. You need to, whatever. It's like a whole thing. It doesn't need to be at the 10 series, like 10 session series. It could be that. But the way that I work is very much more specific to like what the person needs. Okay. So I feel like if you're good, you could probably get, you know, what you'd want out of the full 10 series in much less time instead okay. of it being, they have a very specific recipe. First session, you work with the respiratory diaphragm and right. like, well, like thoracic cavity, all that stuff. Next session, you work with the feet. Next session, you go through these very specific things. Mm. I think as you get more proficient, you just kind of blend it all together.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Tell me, what is an aligned morning?
Well, I think aligned morning would be whatever's aligned for you. But I think generally speaking, the if we were to make like an umbrella mm-hmm. morning, you know, umbrella idea, umbrella plan for people, sunlight is going to be the most important thing to get as soon as you can. That's going to set your circadian rhythm. Mm. You know, so it's setting your hormones and all of your neurochemistry to wake up. Movement is going to be a really big one. You know, I think something that you could do that would be really, really ideal would be, this is like an interesting, this might be a little too esoteric and too far, but perhaps you could do a meditation at some point and visualize the way that you would like to feel. And visualize the way that, you know, what qualities are the most desirable for you. Do you want to feel brave? Do you want to feel strong? Do you want to feel stable? Do you want to feel trustworthy? Do you want to feel loved? Do you want to feel expansive? Do you want to feel light? Do you want to feel euphoric? You know, and just feel into the sensation of what that feels like in your body. And just notice that. How do your shoulders feel? And whatever your desired alignment is, it would be different for everybody. You know, and notice how that sensation, as you start to be able to hold that and build that up in your body, notice how it feels in your chest. Notice how it feels in your breath. How do you breathe while you are embodying that state? How does that feel in your hips? How does that feel in your feet? Now, in your own imagination, maybe sit up from the chair, from the ground, and visualize yourself taking a walk. And notice, how do your shoulders move while you're embodying this sensation? How do your hips move? How do your feet move? Where do your eyes direct themselves? Where's the positioning of your head? How does your breath feel? Now, start to bring the memory of that into your own body and start to just notice, maybe you could learn a little bit from that version of yourself, because that version of yourself is an actual real living version of yourself. It's in your mind. And maybe you could learn how to breathe from that person. Maybe you could borrow how to walk from that person. Maybe you could borrow how to kind of, how do the shoulders move from that person. And then just come back into your body and start to sit with yourself and breathe with yourself and walk with yourself. See if you can kind of learn a little bit from yourself.
That's great.
Awesome. Yeah. I just made that up right now. I mean, that's like something that was just like, it felt like, yeah. I mean, I've like different iterations of that, but you know, that's something that's like visualization is very powerful, you know? And so something that we can do all the time. Like, we have this story of who we think that we are right now. Mm. And that's something that can happen if you start to make some new friends, or maybe you make a change and you're in your friend group, and suddenly your friend group kind of like clashes. It's like, suddenly you're starting to wear red pants. And your friend's like, bro, fucking red pants. Like, oh, okay, here we go. It's like, I don't know. There's something about, I was feeling it, like red pants. Hmm. You know, it's like, but your friend group has this story, you know, this identity structure of who you are. And they'll go, oh, bro, we don't do red pants. Like, you have that with yourself as well. So wherever you're at in your moment, it could just be something very simple. It could just be just the way, like the way that you breathe. You know, getting into like, dang, like how would the most confident, strong, competent, capable, embodied version of myself breathe? Like, what would that be like? Would it be like this? Probably not. You know? It probably wouldn't be like that. It'd probably be through your nose. Mm. It'd probably be like a long exhalation. It'd probably like really fill up this horizontal space in the side of your ribs. It'd fill up and decompress the lower back and feel the whole diaphragm just boost descending. You can feel it in your pelvic floor, right? You can feel it in your, you probably can't swear, but your, you know, whatever the cuss word for penis would be, or vagina would be, you know, all like the embodied females is like, feel it in your pussy. It's like, feel it in your pussy, you know, like tap into your sexuality. Like, it's all beautiful. It's a part of your power. Like, can you breathe into that space? And that, I think that's like, whew, it's like, something starts going.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, shoot. Like, all right. You shake somebody's hand. You're like, oof.
Yeah.
Like, what's up? I'm here. Mm. Like, I'm stable.
That's awesome.
You know? Yeah, there's not like if there's any shame within you, like I'll hold it. Like I don't just need you to hold my shame. Like I'm like we're holding the shame in here. We're holding the fear. We're holding the guilt. We're holding like all the resistances. Like I love all of it. I'm in process with this. I'm speaking as though like I've you know arrived someplace. I'm coaching myself right now.
It's what you explain is a beautiful technique that I've done. I first heard about it in a book called The Mind Gym.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I forgot one. It's got like bicep. It's like biceps on a dumbbell or something.
I got the audio.
It's like a brain with biceps, I think.
Maybe.
Anyways, whatever.
That's a funny visual.
I've got it in my house.
And it says it's like before you go on stage, if you get date anxiety, you close your eyes and you imagine, okay, what would a super confident version, how would they breathe? Mm-hmm. What would their self-talk be? How mm-hmm. would they walk? What would their posture be? How mm-hmm. would they move? And those things, you become that person.
If you can create it in your mind, it is real.
It is real. It will manifest in reality.
Yeah.
That's it.
And like any person, you know, you mentioned Arnold Schwarzenegger, we were talking before. Arnold Schwarzenegger started off as a dork, just like anybody else. Everybody starts off as a dork. Like every person, like that's every person. Mm. There is not a single person out there that did not start off as a dork. Mm. So what was it inside of their imagination
yeah.
that brought them to that place? Did it already happen? Was Steve Jobs already Steve Jobs as a young person? I mean, it's kind of like an existential conversation, but you could certainly suggest that perhaps Steve Jobs was just on the path of Steve's Jobsing for his whole life. So if you start a mountain climb and you're looking at the top of the mountain to be fully expressed, you know, 39-year-old, whatever, Steve Jobs, I don't know how old he was when he, you know, whatever, when he's at his peak. Mm. But I'm on the trail, I'm Steve Jobsing. So like, I'm practically already, like I'm in the path.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it's not like, oh, I'm like, it's like this disembodied, disassociated, like it's all the way over. It's like, no, you were on the path of exactly where you're going.
It's the hero's journey. You're there. Yeah.
So while you're in that path, I think that the dynamic thing is, I believe, I don't know about this for sure. Perhaps it's all this is like predestined and set. I'd be curious your perspective. Do you think like most of our paths are predestined? Or how much free will do we have?
Oh, man. Wow. This is an ancient philosophical question there. The free will. You know, the scientists, I think Sam Harris and these guys, they talk about it. And there's an experiment in the 70s, Benjamin Libet, where he, you know, this experiment where he could actually, he put electrodes on the head of the participants, and he was able to predict when they would move their finger before they consciously were aware that they wanted to move the finger by like a tiny, tiny amount with the brain activity.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. So before they were aware of it, the brain,
pre-movement,
the brain made the decision.
Yeah.
So it's like, and then some people say we don't have free will, but we have free won't. What I think, what my experience is, because I cannot predict my next thought, I feel that free will is very, very tiny. We can only choose one thing, and that's whether or not we're going to stay as awareness or stay in the ego. I mean, and I think when you go in a real deep meditation, you realize there's nobody home. You're not, there's no thinker here. Thoughts are just happening. Mm. You're not thinking them. Mm. They just happen. And Nisargadatta Maharaj, he said, the problem is you think you're having thoughts. No, thoughts are, they're like farts. They just kind of just happen. They're just part of the body. Yeah. And so this is kind of the position that I've felt into and kind of understood to be true. But beyond intellectual understanding, it's kind of is what it is without like questioning it, right? So this is, well, what's your experience? Well,
I don't know. There, within that, there's like if things get too releasing of the ego and to everything just is, it can start to also venture down into like a disassociated, like somewhat even like nihilistic type terrain, maybe not necessarily nihilistic, but disassociated, where it's like there's a difference between non-attachment mm-hmm. and disassociation, you know? And so I think that that's where some of like the spiritual bypassing stuff starts to come up on the map, where it's like, well, we can't just smile through everything. Well, you can actually. That might be like the right thing for a lot of things. But there's also that like being deeply engaged in the game and not being consumed by the game. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like I'm not of the game, but I'm on the board. Mm. Like, and I want to play. Mm. I want to compete. Like, there's something nice about that. That like that testosterone of like, no, like, let's play.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, where it's just like, well, what is the game? You know, and like, what is the function of the game? And it's like,
well, that's meanwhile, ego the other, too.
There's a bunch of kids out there throwing dirt at each other's faces, like smiling and laughing.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, like, that's it. Yeah. That's the thing.
Mm. Well, I mean, and this goes back to free will. And if everything is destined, so whether you are with those kids throwing the dirt is already written, or whether you're contemplating existence and existential nature of human condition, that's already predestined as well. It's interesting because you can't think yourself out of true meditation is not, it's actually not something you do. There was a guy named Papaji. He said, when you think you're meditating, you're not meditating. When you think there's a meditator, you're not meditating. And that what you said, when you get to a place where you're just in nirvana, and this is again a trick of the ego. When you do recognize your true nature, actually you're even more connected because you recognize that all is one. You're better able to serve. You're better able to connect because you're already there.
So I would say with that same sentiment, the kids throwing crap on each other's faces and having a good time are meditating because they're just in it, you know, and it's just joy.
Yeah. Yeah,
and openness and just complete attunement with the other person's nervous system.
Yeah.
Like that's what we're doing when it's like, oh, was that too much crap?
Yeah.
That pile was a big one.
Yeah.
You know, and having that joy and that like that that's moment. It. That's you know, like, it. Like that, I will take that over some sterile, you know, like I'm too good for throwing dirt at each other. Meditation existence on top of some mountain somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm like, I would hope that I'm going up to the mountain to be able to get back to that kid situation where we can just play. Like, does it go back to play? Like, I did a podcast recording of Byron Katie.
Yeah, I know Katie.
A couple years ago or something. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that stood out with what she said in the conversation. She was like, she's like, is it kind? If what you're doing is coming from kindness, then it's like, you're probably pretty good. Like, so is it kind? It's like, oh, interesting. You know, so like just like having like a general heuristic or a general roadmap of where I'm going, you know, like, is it creating joy? You know, is it kind to myself? You know, is what I'm doing opening me up? Mm-hmm. You know, and having that general compass of like, do I feel more open when I'm doing these things? Or do I feel more kind of contracted and closed? Mm-hmm. You know, and it doesn't, sometimes I think we can get like too spiritual. And we could miss out on a lot of like just the like the amazing, brilliant lessons of being a human. That's like a Ram Dass thing. He had one of his guru people tell him that he was becoming too spiritual.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Spiritual ego.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He's like, no, bro, you're too holy. This is too much. You're too still. You're too non-attached. You need like you entered the human curriculum. Be a human. Yeah, like throw some dirt.
Yeah,
you know, like get weird.
Yeah,
get uncomfortable.
Yeah,
you know, be around people. Like make some bad decisions.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like feel consequences. Like get involved.
but there's no. I think when you recognize that it's just happening as it's meant to happen. There's an old saying. It's like before enlightenment, chop. I'm just, no, you know this.
Oh, yeah,
before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood. Carry water.
Yeah, keep going.
But no wood chopper.
What's that?
But no wood chopper.
What do you mean? Like a machine?
There's nobody there doing it anymore.
Oh, yeah, right.
It's just happening.
Right.
And there's no more person who thinks that they're doing it.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned in there, it's like you're not healing your own wound. You're not growing your own hair. You're not blinking the eye. You're not beating the heart.
Yeah.
You're actually not thinking the thoughts.
Well, that's the highest point of human existence, I would say, is you're navigating your humanness in a form of play. So like if you're playing an instrument, and this is again like 95% of anything philosophical that I recite comes from Alan Watts or Ram Dass, because I just like them both a lot.
They're great.
You know, but that was one of the things that one of those guys said. It's all conflated as like one person for me at this point. You know, if you're playing an instrument, the best song isn't the one that finishes the fastest.
Ooh, I like that's Alan Watts.
Like that's what we're doing in modern culture. It's like the best song is not the one that's done in, oh, I got it done in 2 seconds. It was like, no, like you didn't even start, son. Like pause for 10 seconds. Just boom, bang. You know, it's like, it's not about getting anywhere, which all this stuff, again, it's very, it becomes very kind of like, can be like esoteric and wanky. And
it's funny this, and it's the space between the notes that make the music, the pauses.
Yeah. Mm. Same thing in your nervous system. Yeah. It's all the same thing. Hmm. Like you're playing your nervous system, you know, and if you, yes, hopefully we got that.
The chair.
See, that was perfect.
That was like a roller coaster.
Dude, that was the universe, bro. That happened. That was divine intervention. Would it be weird if you finished with a different chair, though? We had a technical situation. That'd be funny if you have my like, yeah.
See, it wasn't even shocking to me. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Great.
I like it. Yeah. Like, all right, rework.
He's so funny.
I love it.
Dude, you can't not include that.
Oh, we have
that's
to.
That's important.
No, we have. Well, that's what we're going to start with.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that'd be a great clip.
All right. Welcome back.
That was amazing.
There was a YouTube video a long time ago. Carol Took a Tumble. You remember this one?
No.
This girl. You remember this one?
I don't know about that one.
This girl, she was a big girl. And she started dancing on a table. And then fell, and it was like one of the first viral videos.
Yeah.
And like a few years ago, like they found her again. And she was talking about it.
You know who I have empathy for is anybody named Karen.
Okay. Yeah, it's tough. It's a Isn't tough time tough for life? Karens. Yeah. It's
a tough time. When I meet someone called Karen, I'm just
I'm like keeping to myself, but it always becomes a conversation.
Yeah, you got to
change. You always talk about it. Like we got to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm not Karen. I'm Corinne.
Yeah, exactly. You got to change up because of culture, because of wokeness.
You have to.
Shift.
All right, let's play a quick game.
All right, here we go.
Get you out of here. So this game is called, it's a rapid fire game. It's called The Five Bests.
Oh, okay.
When was the best time in your life?
Those are such hard questions.
Yeah. You know, just pick one. Pick a great time. It could be now.
I mean, the cliche new age answer really would be now. And that would also be a very honest answer in a lot of ways.
100%.
Bro, honestly, in a lot of ways, this week has been the best time of my life. Mm. Yeah, really. I'm like really, I'm doing what I love. I'm working with people that I respect and I'm like really like on board with. I'm so grateful to get to share my birthday with you. Like this is like an interesting thing to get to. You know, today I'm like, I'm going to see a client after this. Mm. And it's someone that I like really love and really appreciate. I'm very like on their team. I'm like, we're going to do great things. Let's go. And I have the opportunity to live and breathe what I love with people that I love, you know, and that's something that I'm really like kind of spellbound by that. This whole week has been really amazing. And I got back from freaking Greece and Turkey, you know, a week ago and then to here. And there's been like, there's been some magic going on recently, and I think part of what I'm working to do is release the idea of anticipating the shoe dropping, because that's been something a part of my like kind of leading on the edges a little bit, like okay, like I trust, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, but like oh, but like what if?
Yeah.
I was like, what if I just trust?
Yeah.
You know, and if something happens, great.
Let it go. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So honestly, the cliche new age and honest answer would be right now. Sorry.
No, it's good. What's the best quote you ever heard?
I don't know if it's the best quote, but one I really like that's relevant to the work that I do and things that I share about is the way that you walk through a room is the way that you walk through your life. I think that encapsulates a lot of, you know, what I am sharing in like the book, The Align Method, or, you know, the courses that I do or any of the coaching that I do. It's a lot about how do we start to integrate fitness into being who you are as a person. Like, I don't care about the thing that you do. I care about who you are. And I want you to care about who you are. You know, and the way that you breathe and the way that you walk and the way that you sit and the way that you stand, the way that you communicate and the activities that you're attracted to and, you know, the people that you surround yourself with, like all of that is movement. And the way that you inhabit yourself in those experiences, like that is fitness.
Awesome. Best advice you ever got?
What is it? Don't sweat the small things. Mm. Pet the sweaty things.
What else? Oh, I never heard that one.
What's that joke? What's that joke?
I never heard that one.
Pet the sweaty things.
I never heard that one.
Don't sweat the small things. No, I don't know. I don't know what the best advice I've ever gotten is. feel like I could just give myself some advice right now. I don't know if I have something that's like the best advice. Oh, I got one. This is a good one. This was in relation to like intimacy, relationship stuff. One of the things that's been like a boundary of sorts for me, or a little resistance for me, is the idea of forever commitment. You know, and like, let's make a child together and let's make a family together and like really be in this for forever. And I was talking to somebody about this recently. It's like, yeah, of course, like that's normal. And the suggestion was, what if you loved forever right now? And I was like, oh, well, that kind of changes everything. You know, so are you able, instead of having this large quantity of time in life and being like, okay, like I'm in this forever, like what if you just tried on the idea or the experience or the feeling of I love you forever right now? And just be with that. Like, what is it like to I love you forever?
That's a beautiful
right switch, now.
Yeah.
And just see what that does.
It's great.
Like, does that,
awesome.
Like, what's that like for you? Because what it'll probably do is it'll open up some space within yourself and some space within the other person. And it could just be yourself and yourself as well. And just see what that does. As opposed to it being like, well, I'm never going to do anything because, you know, the ante is too high. So I'm just going to back out from everything because the ante is too high. So like, what if we just experimented or just, let's just try it on. What is it like to fully love forever right now?
Fear of love, baby. That's it. Fear versus love.
Yeah.
Best book you ever read?
If there was one that I would like recommend a lot, it's probably, this feels kind of like a little bit of a soft cliche answer as well, but Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. I think that's a really solid one. I really like it because it comes from, you know, who it comes from.
Yeah.
You know, like anybody can write a book and they can have insights and whatnot, but to be able to tap into the mind, like the brilliant mind of somebody like that, that's gone through the experience that they did, and be able to still maintain just the fortitude and, yeah, just like the tenacity and the courage to be able to like go through that and still keep their head up to the degree that it seems like they did, and be able to share that information. The other one that's very similar to that would be the Book of the Five Rings, Miyamoto Musashi. Similar thing. He's like this, like, well, similar and very, very different. But he was the, you know, world's most notorious, famous samurai.
Yep.
And he spent his whole life doing war. You know, and he was, you know, just having duels with the baddest samurais around Japan and just killing these men. Like, not that that's an admirable thing or not or whatever, but just like, what a weird life. You know, to go from place to place and like, find me your gnarliest swordsman and we're gonna fight to the death, and then a mercenary, and then just like, bro, like what a life to live. And then he goes up into a cave at the end of his life and he writes a book about his perspectives on war. It's like, well, like you could just download that,
yeah,
on Kindle.
Incredible.
Like, really?
Incredible. What a time. What a time. Wow. Wow. Yeah, it's a big book in business schools too.
Oh, I see.
In Japan, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I get that. Yeah, it's good. And in that there's a lot of a similar influence of Ida Rolf stuff. Ida Rolf's the gal that I was quoting Ida Rolf when I said the way you walk through a room is the way you walk through life. The one of the quotes from the Book of the Five Rings is make your everyday stance your battle stance. So that's essentially what the Align Method is aspiring to teach. Is like, throughout the day, you are always training. You're never not training. Every breath that you're taking is an opportunity to breathe a little bit better. You know, maybe extend your exhalation a little bit, down regulate nervous system. You know, maybe start to build up your CO2 tolerance a little bit, and maybe do a couple of breath holds. And you're walking down the street and you exhale all your air and you just hold your breath between here and the next phone pole.
Yeah, yeah.
And you just develop a little bit of air hunger.
Yeah.
You start to just like get a little less soft. Like just get just, yeah, like, man, a little less soft.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yes.
Like I've done that. Collectively, I think we could harden up a little bit.
Yeah.
And then soften up a little bit internally. Oh, so oh. Like get the sleeve a little harder. Get the core a little softer.
Well said.
Yeah.
last question is my magic wand question. And the magic wand question I ask is, if I gave you a magic wand, and you waved it at the earth. And tomorrow when you woke up, whatever wish, whatever magic wand wish that you made was granted, what would your magic wand wish be?
Mm. Man, that's a heavy question. I need just a little more time to sit with that for you to get a real answer.
Take your time.
But I would say, I think if we could just tap back in collectively into that child wonderment, like collectively, you know, all of like the Bidens and the Trumps and, you know, the Kim Jong-uns of the world, you know, could actually come into a place of feeling just really in awe of how beautiful this planet is and how beautiful they are and how beautiful the world is and the people are, and be able to drop any type of shame and just feel like really truly feel like collectively a deep inherent sense of trust and self-worth and value and belief and wonderment, and just be like, wow, like we're here, you know. And we'd probably dance a little bit more, we'd probably party a little bit more, we'd probably, you know, get outside in the sun more often, we'd probably put our phones down more often, and we'd probably make more art, and we'd probably have sex more, and we'd probably give each other massages more, we'd probably meditate and start doing Reiki and like weird esoteric stuff. And it would just be a cool world to be in, you know. And so any version of shame that exists within a person, like that's gone, you know. And we still get the lessons that we got from it, you know, but it's like, no, like I'm really like my full expression, like I love all of this and I love all of that for you. Any type of fear that goes, I think that would be, because there's a lot of things like, you know, $1 million, you know, or like fly or whatever, but it's like that wouldn't matter if you still live in a fucking broken ass world.
Exactly.
Not the world's broken, the world is not broken, I don't like that idea at all. You know, but hypothetically, if the world's broke,
no, I understand.
And you got, you know, a bag, it doesn't mean anything. It really doesn't mean anything.
No.
Right? Like you're just gonna be lonely with your bag.
Yeah.
Like what really truly feels good, and all the data and science says it, is like giving back feels good. You know, so I think that would be really advantageous to just like the betterment of everything. If everybody felt good, you know, you also would feel quite good as well. And I think a lot of the reason that people don't feel good is because they are little children wearing adult costumes, and they're playing the game of life in these adult costumes, and they're acting out old unhealed patterns from their past. And it's coming out in the form of greed. It's coming out in the form of violence. It's coming out in the form of avoidance or anxiety or shame or depression, resistance of some sort. And behind all of that are these really beautiful children that just want to play, and they want to throw poop at each other's faces, and they want to laugh, and they want to like be in awe of everything, and they want to go lick bricks and see how they taste, and just like, wow, like this, like we're here, son. That would be dope.
Awesome. Love that answer. Love that. Beautiful. Where can people find you? Where, if they want to learn more about you or grab your book?
Yeah. The book's called The Align Method. And it's a, you know, it's a very actionable guide on how to drive this body way more effectively. You know, so with writing it, every one of the litmus tests with it was to be able to open up any page anywhere in all of the, however long it is, 280 some pages, and be able to get actionable, typically humorous value out of any page.
Cool.
You know, so that was one of my things that I would do as I was going through the editing process. Typically, I'd be like taking a poop, you know, and I'd open up any page and I'd just be like, boom, 87. Like, did I get something out of this in a really a digestible, actionable way that makes my day better? Yes or no? And pretty much across the board, that's the case with it. So that's the Align Method. And then I'd love to have you on my podcast, the Align Podcast. Mm-hmm. So whenever we do that, that'd be really great. And yeah, we have online program. I have a free week of a program if people want to get involved in some actual like movement practices. And in that, I teach people several fundamental mobility techniques. So it's teaching people how to do like PNF stretching and pin and stretch and various different forms of mobility practices that are just very valuable. It takes people through a movement assessment as well.
This is online. Mm-hmm. Or, okay.
Yeah. So the first week is totally free. So people can, if they want to check that out and assess their own movement, see how their knees and their ankles and hips and such are moving. That's alignpodcast.com/AMP. And that's all the things, you know, social media, all the things, but just everything's Align Podcast.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. Aaron, thank you for coming on Sauna Sessions. It was a pleasure to have you.
Dude, so good. This is so fun. What an experience.
Yeah. Good times.